You're listening to the Stress in the City podcast, a self-care resource for the busy and burned out. I'm your host, voiceover artist Brittany Nicole, and each episode, I'm breaking down adulting. Because what's more stressful than being an adult, right? I'll share the best books, methods, and tips to help us all figure out how to do this life thing better. Ready? Let's start the show. Hi, friends. Welcome back to another episode of Stress and the City. I'm your host, Brittany Nicole, and we've got big therapy energy this episode because I have a lot to say. Today, we're going to be discussing types of therapy because there are actually more than one way to get mental health help besides just sitting on a couch. We'll be talking about how to actually find a therapist, which can be an overwhelming process in and of itself. And we'll also be talking about some red and green flags when it comes to actually working with the therapist, how to know if your therapist is a good fit for you or if they aren't. So let's get into it. Starting with types of therapy. Most of us are familiar with talk therapy. You've probably seen it on TV or movies, and this is where essentially a person, you know, sits on a couch or nowadays Zoom, so maybe sitting in a car, as many of my therapy sessions have been, and you're talking to your therapist and telling them your problems. You know, I'm stereotyping a little bit, but that's just the basic gist of it. And this is like the little black dress of therapy. It's timeless, it's classic, it's well known, so we're not going to go into what it is too much. But what I will say are there are all types of talk therapy and all types of therapists. So if you're in the market for a therapist, before you consider starting, it's good to really consider, like, what are you looking for in a therapist? Do you want someone who works specifically with anxiety, someone who specializes in grief, someone who's done a lot of work around sexual trauma? Would you prefer to work with someone who is culturally similar to you, culturally different than you, older than you, close in age? Going into it for myself, for example, I knew I wanted a therapist that was also a Black woman. I wanted someone who could easily understand how being a Black woman informs my experience in the world and who, you know, as Black people, we have a culture and we have a language, and that is native to us. And I wanted someone who already culturally understood that language so that I could speak freely. I knew that being vulnerable was going to be hard for me. And so I wanted to make it easier on myself to be able to speak my mother tongue, so to speak. And I knew if I had to use my corporate voice, then I'd lose the realness, the authenticity. I found my therapist using a directory, which I'll talk about a little bit more later. I liked her website, which is important to me. And I also liked that she had a social media presence. I went on her Instagram and looked at like every post and video she's ever posted. And one of her IG videos, she was talking about this show on Amazon Prime called Modern Love. And she was kind of analyzing it. There's an episode where Anne Hathaway is in it, and the character has some mental health struggles. So she was kind of talking about her portrayal of that. And I was like, okay, she seems, you know, with the times. I went and watched the show, and the episode was so good. It was so good. So I was like, okay, she has good taste. I think this is the one for me. And truth be told, I waited a couple of months before I actually pulled the trigger. But that was what my process was like, and that was what was important to me. The other thing is, I reached out to her by email first to kind of see like, what's the process? How much does it cost? And I was intimidated by having weekly sessions because at that time I couldn't afford that. So I asked her if I could do once every 3 weeks and she agreed. And the rest is history. So that's really all I'm going to say about talk therapy. You know, we know pretty much what it is. We'll talk about some more details on how to find a therapist, but I think a key takeaway I want to share is when you're looking for a therapist, think about and try and get clear on, if you can, what it is you're wanting to work on or work through. And then in the process of trying to find someone, see if you can prioritize somebody who specializes in that. Next type of therapy, I think this is gaining popularity, but it's still not nearly as well known as talk therapy. And this is called EMDR. It's short for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. Now, there is talking with this modality, but it's not like talk therapy where it's a conversation, it's a back and forth. And this one, your therapist is more so guiding you through the experience versus having a back and forth conversation. So let me explain the point of EMDR first. What EMDR does is it helps your brain to reprocess memories and trauma. This type of therapy is really specifically good for trauma, for people who struggle with PTSD, for people who have experienced traumatizing events. And right now, it's complicated to explain how this works because it's not fully understood how it works. But the process is using bilateral stimulation to the brain, which means it's stimulating both sides of the brain as you recall a memory. And what has been discovered is doing this helps to make the memory less painful. What this looks like is, you know, it looks kind of weird. It looks kind of weird, honestly. You are working with a therapist, either, you know, in the room or virtually, because I have done virtual EMDR sessions, and they are using either their hands or a light, or I've seen where people have like two probes in their hands that vibrate. And so you get a stimulation on the right side and the left side. If someone's using their hands, they may be guiding their hands back and forth in front of your eyes. Or if it's a light, it may be, if there's a light beam that you're looking at, the light beam may be going back and forth in front of your eyes. And your therapist is guiding you through a set point or a memory. And you're describing the memory as you're watching this light or their hands or you're feeling the stimulation. So you have two different processes happening in your brain at the same time. You're stimulating both sides of your brain as you're calling up this memory. And essentially, it's a way of teaching your brain and body that what happened is in the past, that you survived and that you're now safe. Because a lot of times with trauma and traumatic experiences, your body doesn't know the difference between then and now. You know, you may be triggered by something or something may bring up the memory for you and your body experiences it as if it's happening now. This is kind of a way of taking the pain out of the memory, taking the pain out of the trauma and letting it live in the past. And I know that sounds really strange if you've never done it before, but I have tried this. I only had a few sessions, but I have to say this was pivotal for me in connecting my mind to my body in a way that I didn't know was possible. She taught me how to meditate, and she taught me how to listen to my body in a literal way, not just like pay attention to yourself, like truly listening to my cells, listening to my muscles. What is my body trying to communicate to me? And I didn't know that was a thing. If somebody said that to me before, I would have thought they were like woo-woo or something. But I was doing EMDR therapy when I was experiencing panic attacks. So I was kind of like, all right, well, I'm gonna try this out. My brain is not working right now. So if this is gonna help me rewire my brain, I will try pretty much anything. And I won't say that this, you know, I think me working through my panic attacks was a combination of multiple things, but this was a pretty big step because it made me realize that your body communicates with you. It has its own language. Like, body language is a real language, and this is when I started to learn. Also with EMDR, it can be intense to revisit memories. So go into it knowing that you may experience things you didn't expect to feel, and you may notice feelings that come up, and that's part of the process. That's really the work. It is intense, but it's really useful if you're ready. And I remember in one of my sessions, she was asking me something about a memory I had mentioned from my childhood. And before that session, that memory was not really crystallized in my mind like it is now. And now it's so vivid that I'm like, how could I have ever forgotten this? You know, so it's really interesting. I recommend doing it with a person versus, you know, there are like EMDR online options, and I've tried those too, and I just haven't found it to really be the same, because the process of having someone there guiding you and asking you the questions you might not think to ask yourself really makes a difference. But if, you know, talk therapy is not feeling right for you right now, or if you have something really specific, a specific memory that's taunting you or troubling you, this might be an option. Do some research into it and see if that's for you. Now, there's another type of therapy called somatic experiencing, and this is more of a mind and body practice. Rather than just talking through how you think and feel, you're taught to notice how your body reacts to your thoughts, your feelings, your memories, people. You're really getting trained to work with your body in a really mindful way in order to relieve stress and release trauma. And I get it, that sounds abstract, but it's really, really profound. It's kind of like learning a language that you already knew. You know, I have not worked with a somatic therapist specifically, but my EMDR therapist that I was working with taught me this work and taught me how to listen to the sensations of my body and be curious about what my body is trying to communicate to me through that sensation. I learned, you know, tight chest usually means for me that I'm anxious. Heavy shoulders for me means like that's sadness. Pain in the back of my head, that usually means fear for me. And the thing is, sometimes I'll have those physical sensations without the conscious knowing of the emotion. So it's so amazing to me. We think our mind and our body are separate entities, but there are really so many intersections of emotionality and physicality. And this is another, you know, less popular form of therapy. Something that I think one of these days I'm on the hunt for a good somatic experiencing therapist so I can speak a little bit more to it. But this is another option outside of talk therapy, which can help you in ways that you're struggling. If you don't want to recount, you know, your trauma over again to another therapist, or maybe just words are not your first language. You know, maybe you're more tactile and that communicating with your body comes a little bit easier to you. This might be something to consider. Now, there are other modalities, which I don't have any experience with, but I know that they exist, like art therapy, music therapy, dance therapy. So I can't speak from that angle at all. But what I can say is I can definitely see and have seen how using artistic mediums can improve health. I'm going to speak on this more on a later episode that I have planned about what to do if therapy isn't an option for you. So now let's talk a little bit about how to find a therapist. And I'll be honest, I really have been dreading this part because I don't feel like I have straight answers. And I think that's because it's really just not a straight process. It's, I would like to tell you that it's going to be easy and simple and all you have to do is X, Y, and Z, but it's not. It's not easy and simple. I think you have to go into it with the energy that you would dating someone, which means, you know, if you're trying to be in a relationship, you have to put yourself out there. You're going to have to do some work to meet people. You have to put yourself out there and get to know someone, let them get to know you, and also know that, you know, you might not marry the first person that you date. Sometimes things just don't work out. And that's kind of the therapy process. This is a relationship. And there does have to be a courting process. There does need to be chemistry and understanding. And the difficult thing about it is you do all of those things and, you know, sometimes you invest a little bit of money and things don't work out. So it's not a straight process, unfortunately, but I'm hoping that I can make it a little bit easier by sharing some of my insights and what I've discovered and what helped me when I was searching for therapists at different point in my life. I have dropped therapists before. I have, you know, reached out and not heard back. I've made calls to find out the cost of treatment and realize I couldn't afford it and put it off for years. I've given up because the process was daunting. You know, here I am trying to do something that's already scary and I'm totally unsure of. And, you know, so I get it, but don't give up. Here's what I recommend personally. Like I mentioned earlier, I think the very first thing to figure out is what's bringing you to therapy. You may not know exactly, and that's okay. Just get an idea of what you need help with. For example, if you're struggling with depression, you might be interested in working with someone who specializes in helping those with depression specifically. When you're clear on this, then you have something to help you define your search. And that's really key. There's so much out there. So you want to have criteria. You want to have some expectations and some standards that you're going into your search with so that you can kind of weed out what's not relevant for you. Also, if you have insurance, it would be really helpful to know if you have mental health coverage, what kind of mental health coverage you have. I recommend calling your insurance company, ask for the benefits department, and ask them to explain to you what mental health coverage you have, if any. Ask them if there's a system to help you locate therapists that are in your network, and maybe you can start searching there. You can even go as far as to ask, you know, if I were to go to a session in network, what would be my out-of-pocket cost? And they should be able to give you an approximate number. A lot of insurance companies, even in their directories, have reviews. They're typically not a lot, but if you find someone in your directory, then search their name in Google, in Instagram, in YouTube. See if you can find a website where they talk about who they are, what they do, what they specialize in. Any reviews on people that have worked with them, etc. Use the internet to your advantage. You can also search things like therapists in your city name or therapists in your zip code. If you don't mind a virtual session, you can look beyond your local area. I Once was working with a therapist who's in California, and I'm in Georgia. The directory that I used to find my current therapist is called Therapy for Black Girls, and I believe, I'm not sure if this one is affiliated, but there is also a Therapy for Black Men, and those are great directories. Psychology Today also has a therapist directory, which I have used before as well. There, if you're in school, your counselor's department, I don't know what it's called, they may have a directory of therapists. I've talked to several people who have found therapists through their school, and oftentimes there are benefits or discounts associated with using that directory as a student. Now, if money is an obstacle, there's also the option of group therapy, which is typically a more affordable option because the therapist is working with several people in one session rather than one-on-one. So that's something that you can also search online, group therapists in your city name, group therapists in your zip code. And most importantly, I think, don't count out social media. Nowadays, a lot of mental health professionals are using social media to find clients. Search hashtags like hashtag your city name therapist or hashtag online therapist and see what other hashtags those therapists use for more ideas. Now, you do want to verify that you're dealing with someone who's licensed and trained, but I almost, whatever resource I pull the therapist information from, I always go and look for them on Instagram and on Facebook to see who they are. Because a lot of times they share a little bit more about their personalities, a little bit more about what they work with on social media. And that's a good way to kind of get to know them. Now, my last tip in reference to finding a therapist, a lot of them offer 20, 30 minute consultations for free. And please utilize this prior to your first appointment. You know, therapy is not free. So if they're going to give you 20 to 30 minutes of their time, use that. You can use that to figure out who they are, if you vibe with them, if you feel comfortable with them, you know, ask any questions about their process, their background, get a sense of their personality, confirm any cost details. I would treat it like you're interviewing someone for a job because actually you are. Now, we talked about how to find a therapist. We talked about different types of therapy. Let's go a little further into the process and say you have your therapist now. How do you know that this is the right therapist for you? What are some red flags and even some green flags? Because it happens, you know, therapists are people. They are not perfect. They make mistakes. And sometimes, a good therapist might just not be the one for you. And that it's good to know that up front, rather than putting all your hopes and dreams in one person. I always recommend thinking critically about everything, even your therapist. So here are some things to keep in mind that you might want to think twice about if you're noticing this or experiencing this in your sessions. If your therapist forgets things that you say or gets you mixed up with another client often, that's a red flag. They might be overwhelmed or whatever the case is, who knows? But the fact is you are, you know, paying them for their attention to you, and forgetting things that you say and forgetting things that you've talked about. Or I had one therapist who was always like, remember that homework that we went over? And I'm like, yeah, we never did that. And she's like, yeah, we did. And I'm like, no, I'm a homework person. I would know, you know. Red flag. Didn't work out with her. That is a red flag to me. If your therapist dismisses your feelings and or doesn't really try to understand your feelings, that's a huge red flag for me. Like, that's the whole point. You know, this is supposed to be the place where you can share the things that you may not be able to share anywhere else in your life. So
are you going to pay somebody to dismiss your feelings? I don't think so.
Red flag. Another red flag. And this is a fine line, so maybe this is an orange flag. Maybe this is an orange flag. If your therapist tries to make decisions for you or tells you what to do, there are going to be times, depending on the situation, where I can see a therapist being like, this is what you need to do. You know, if you're in danger or if it's, you know, really harmful to you, whatever it is that you're trying to do. But at the end of the day, their job is not to tell you what to do. It's to help you think, not to think for you. And there's a fine line of being open to suggestions on your part and just being obedient. You don't want to take on a I want to please my therapist mentality, because that's not healthy. That's not helpful for you. That's not the point. You know, it's not the point of therapy is not for you to make your therapist happy. It's for you to heal and for you to grow. So take that into consideration if you find that your therapist is trying to make decisions for you or tell you what to do. That might be a conversation to have with them about that. Now, this is going to be kind of vague, but if something feels off, but you can't put your finger on it, listen to that instinct. Listen to that instinct. It may not mean that they're necessarily a bad person or a bad therapist. It just might mean that they're the wrong therapist for you. Or maybe you need to ask them to make an adjustment. And if they can, that's great. If they can't, maybe they're not a good fit. But if something feels off, don't ignore that feeling. It doesn't necessarily mean cut them off and never see them again. It might mean have a conversation about it. Just don't ignore the feeling. If your therapist can't take feedback, like if you've given them feedback on how they're communicating with you or how they're making you feel and they're unable or unwilling to make an adjustment, that's a red flag. You know, this is your mind that they're working with, so it's perfectly okay for you to set some terms here. And this is a working relationship between the two of you. Your boundaries or expectations should be respected. And the last red flag for me is a pretty big one. And I would say try and root this out in the beginning if you can. If the therapist has a bias toward a particular issue, I mean, we're human. We all have biases for and against things. But if you sense that a therapist has a bias that's particular to your issue and it's working against you or it's hindering your progress, that could be a red flag. Let's talk about some green flags, though. Just like I said, forgetting things that you say and mixing you up with another client. A green flag is remembering things you've said and remembering previous sessions. I feel like my therapist is so good at this because she recalls things from sessions that I had years ago and things that are going on in my life. And it really makes me feel like she cares and understands. And that safety is so important. You really need to feel safe with your therapist. I think a really good green flag is a therapist who is resourceful. You can always ask, you know, do you have any resources that talk about this topic more? Or is there anything that you would recommend for me to read on this topic to kind of help me process it more? I ask my therapist for that all the time. And she always has a book or a podcast or an article. She introduced me to the Insight Timer app, which is what I use for meditation. And that helps to extend the healing outside of just our one-on-one session, but making it a habit in my life. Another green flag, and this is not going to be comfortable, but it's going to be good for you, is a therapist who knows how to push you the right way. Sometimes therapists are there to hold your hand and comfort you, and sometimes they're there to push you to feel deeper, to see things that you're avoiding, to work through things that you're not paying attention to. But it's key that they know how to push you. It's key that they know what works for you and what doesn't work for you. Be mindful of therapists who try to push you to say something they want you to say. A good push should feel caring and safe, like firm but gentle at the same time. A pushy push feels like control. If you feel like you're an actor in a role, you know, like they're trying to pull some emotion out of you that you're not feeling, that's not a good push. Have a conversation about that. You can say something like, I feel like you're directing me toward a certain emotion that I'm not feeling. So the next green flag is being open to being wrong. I think this is a big deal. Therapists are people. They're not perfect. They take dumps. They don't have everything figured out. So humility and openness is key and on their part, and them being able to help you and also being able to learn and become better at their craft. In order to be curious about you, genuinely curious, they have to be open. They can't have decided who you are and what's wrong with you, because if they're wrong, then they, you know, could be leading you in the wrong direction. So being open to being wrong is important for a therapist. It's important. This is a really important quality in a person, period. You know, I don't trust people who think that they're always right. I damn sure will not trust a therapist if I sense that they're the kind of person who thinks that they're always right. Nobody's always right. Nobody. And the last green flag is more about you than it is about the therapist, and that's growth. If you are sensing growth in your life, if things that were challenging for you previously are less challenging, or if you are, you know, navigating new situations and looking back at situations that you overcame, that's growth. And growth is a great sign that you and your therapist may be working well together and they may be helping you make healthy adjustments in your life. Well, friends, I hope I was able to demystify therapy at least a little bit for you. Remember, there's all different types of therapy beyond the classic little black dress talk therapy. There's EMDR, there's somatic experiencing, there's art therapy, music therapy, dance therapy, exposure therapy. There's lots of different ways out there to get help. And utilize your resources. Contact your insurance company. Use online directories, use social media, and use your instinct. You know, when you are working with somebody, treat it like a relationship. How do you want to be treated in this relationship? What are your expectations? What are your goals? Take ownership of this process. What if therapy is not something you can do right now? Or what if therapy is not for you? We're going to talk about that in more detail next episode, so stay tuned. For now, though, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode. And if you're enjoying Stress in the City, please give me a follow on Instagram at It's Brittany Nicole. That's ItsBrittneyNicole. And you can pick up a copy of my free audiobook, Adulting 101, at itsbrittanynicole.com/freebook. That's itsbrittanynicole.com/freebook. Check it out. Thank you so much for listening, friends, and until next time, bye.